Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up, mystery, you'll hear the gunpowder plot on The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce a little bit later. Right now, it's suspense with a CBS radio broadcast from January 25th, 1945, called Drury's Bones. Joseph Kearns stars as the man in black, along with William Johnstone and leading man Boris Karloff.
Now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The events that are covered in this report began on the night of December the 28th, 1910, although I didn't know it at the time. But it was on that night that I opened my eyes to discover that I was lying behind some trash barrels in a dark London alleyway. Thunder was ripping the skies apart, and the sheets of rain that were pelting on my unprotected body had soaked me to the skin. My head was aching unbearably, and as I automatically tried to rise, I found I was so dizzy that I had to hold on to the barrels for support. I reached up, feel of my head. My hair was a mass of clotted blood. In my numb mind, I could feel only one urge. I had to find a lighted building somewhere where someone could get me warm clothing and call a doctor. It seemed hours before finally I saw an office building in which a light was burning and gratefully stumbled in its direction.
Listen to this, Peters. There's a report from the... Why, who are you?
I beg your pardon, I...
Great heavens, man. Come over here by the fire. Here, I'll give you a hand.
Here, let me help.
That's it. Good Lord. Look at that head. Peters.
Yes, sir.
You better call the doctor.
Right, sir.
Let's get some of these wet clothes off, eh? Easy now.
This is very kind of you.
Now the trousers. That's it. Robbed, eh?
I suppose so.
Suppose?
Yes. You see, I don't know.
Oh, come, sir. You must know whether or not you had a pocketbook. There's nothing here now, certainly.
There's nothing?
Who are you, by the way?
What?
I say, let's have your name.
My name is... I don't know my name. I don't know. I must have fainted, because the next thing I knew, I was lying on the couch in the office, covered with warm blankets and slowly returning to consciousness. My benefactor and the doctor were talking in hushed voices near the bed.
You say no identification on him, eh?
Nothing except these. I found them under his hatband.
Two ticket stubs, Drury Lane Theatre, December 24th, 1910. Have you checked there?
Oh, there's no possible way to trace them.
Oh, I'll have to call him something.
Yeah.
Drury, that's it. After the Drury Lane. And Terence after you, Inspector Terence. Drury.
Oh, very well. How long do you suppose this condition will last?
Amnesia? No way of knowing. I should get a bit of rest and then some kind of absorbing work. Not strenuous, of course. Mustn't be allowed to brood, you see. Danger and this sort of thing lies in a man's working himself into a genuine psychosis from worry.
I see.
I say, Carruthers, why don't you put him to work here? At least until you locate his family. After all, you can't very well turn your back on the chap now that he's named after you.
Well, as a matter of fact, it happens that I could use a new man around here very nicely.
Oh, well, there you are.
And as to forgetting one's worries and absorbing work, I can't think of a better place in the world for a man to do that than... Scotland Yard.
Amazing stroke of fate that brought me to the London office of Scotland Yard on that dreadful night of December in 1910. For I'm sure that nowhere else could I have had more kindness and understanding. Of course, at first the strain was almost unbearable. I had absolutely no recollection of my past. Had no idea who the man was who lived the first 30 years of my life. Or was it 40? Or 20? I never knew. But Carruthers judged me to be about 30, so I came to regard that as my official age. and he was ingenious in providing interesting work for me. During the days that followed, I became so absorbed in the tide of fascinating cases that flowed across my desk that I had no time for thought or reflection on my plight. My own dossier at last reached what is called the inactive file and was gradually forgotten. In short, my present and my future became so interesting that I came to regard my past as a closed book. And so it was, as a full-fledged inspector, I reported one day in May of 1930 to Chief Inspector Carruthers.
Oh, hello, Drury. Have a chair.
Thanks.
Cigar?
Yes, I will, thank you. Havana, eh? Decently prosperous for a Scotland Yard man, Inspector. Sure you're not involved in a scandal of some sort?
I'm sorry, old boy. Gift from my niece. Have a light.
Only one other conclusion, then. You're about to cancel my holiday.
Well, as a matter of fact...
Murder in Soho, I suppose.
No, not in Soho. In Clovelly.
Clovelly? Clovelly? That's a fishing village in Devon.
That's it. Bit of a resort town, too, you know. Thought you might be able to combine business with pleasure.
I do need a rest, you know.
I have here a letter from a Mr. John Stanhope who resides in Clovelly. It seems he unearthed a human skeleton in his backyard, apparently buried there for years. Or it'll just be a matter of securing a routine report on the case, perhaps questioning this Mr. Stanhope and possibly a few of the local residents. Then you can pop down to Torquay and bask in the sun for a few days. Ever been in North Devonshire?
I avoid it religiously. I'm allergic to moors.
Well, what do you think of it?
Well, if it were anyone else but you, Carruthers. I suppose I'd better write this all down. John Stanhope, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have his address?
Oh, there's no such thing as an address in Clovelly. There's only one street. But you won't have any trouble finding it.
Oh.
What I hear, the townspeople will be quick enough to tell you all about the place where the bones are buried.
Sir, welcome to Clovelly.
How do you do? My name is Drury, Scotland Yard.
You'll want a single, I expect.
Yes, if you have one.
Just sign the register, please.
Very well. There. I understand that Mr. John Stanhope is to leave a message here for me.
Oh, you must be here about the bones.
Yes.
Some excitement they've caused, I'll tell you. What with the Ashley Norton's disappearance, a dark mystery these 20 years and all.
Who were the Ashley Nortons?
Lived in that house 20 years ago, they did. That would be just about the time the body was buried, wouldn't it, sir?
Yes. Did you know them?
Never did see her. Saw him once or twice. Strange pair they was. Unsociable. Keeping themselves to themselves night and day in that house on the cliff. No telling what went on behind them doors.
What do people think went on?
There's some that thinks that what went on was murder.
Murder? Why?
There's those who knows the reasons better than I. I'll leave it to them to tell.
Very well. Let's see. I signed this book too, don't I?
Oh, no, sir. That's our permanent register for new guests. But you've been here before.
I? Why, no. I've never been here before in my life.
Oh, that's odd. For a moment, I thought I'd seen you here before sometime.
Mr. Stanhope?
Yes?
Inspector Drury, Scotland Yard.
Happy to see you, Inspector. Come in, please.
Thank you.
I must apologize for the condition of the place, Mr. Drury. The events of the past few days have been a bit upsetting, to say the least.
I should think so.
Like a spot of sherry?
Why, thanks, yes. I had rather an enlightening conversation with Mrs. Tumley at the inn last night.
Oh?
Seems the townspeople are quite certain it was a case of murder involving some people named Ashley Norton.
Yes, Roger Ashley Norton. His wife was named Sarah.
Did you know them?
Oh, no. I'd never met them. Very few people had. You see, that was 20 years ago. The house originally belonged to my brother. He died in 1925, and I didn't come into the property until after that.
I know it's natural to jump to the conclusion of murder when one uncovers human bones, but is there any reason to suspect a motive? Did anybody disappear suddenly?
No one but the Ashley Nortons.
I see.
There's nothing to go on but gossip, and it's all highly circumstantial, of course. You see, my brother was renting this house to them furnished by the year, payable in advance. And so he rarely had occasion to call on them. But when the regular check failed to arrive on time, he paid them a visit. The house was vacant. And it was immediately clear that no one had lived in the place for the last 2 months.
Your brother made inquiries, of course.
Oh, yes, yes. No one had seen or heard from them for at least 2 months before.
And what date was that, Stanhope?
Oh, now let me see. That was December of 1910.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's quite all right.
Oh, here, let me...
No. The maid will attend to it. Let me get you another.
Not right now, thanks.
Well, would you like to examine the garden?
The garden?
Yes. Where the bones were discovered.
Oh, yes, of course. Up through the French window. Here to the side, I take it.
Yes. Here we are. Just over here, Inspector.
See. And the tree stood about here, eh?
The what?
The holly tree.
I must admit you're a jolly fine detective, sir. The gardener discovered the body while removing the dead holly tree, all right, but I wasn't aware that I mentioned the fact to Scotland Yard.
It was in my room at the inn late that night that I first began my notes. I include them now in this report. Just as I wrote them then. Clovelly, Devon, May 18, 1930. The feeling that this is all a book that I've read or a play I've seen somewhere in the past has taken hold of my very soul. And the terror that grips me when I think of the future makes rational thought very difficult. But nevertheless, I have resolved to pursue the investigation until I am certain that there is no further doubt. I must discover someone who knew Ashley Norton intimately, his profession, his habits, his personality. I think I must risk tomorrow another talk with Mrs. Tumley. But meanwhile, I shall withhold any further report to Carruthers. Now, Mrs. Tumley, you said yesterday that there were some people here in Clovelly who knew the Ashley Nortons rather well.
Did I?
Yes, Mrs. Tumley.
Well, it might have been Effie Wilkes I had in mind.
Who was Effie Wilkes?
She was the Ashley Norton serving maid, sir.
And where is Effie Wilkes now?
Oh, she disappeared, sir.
She disappeared?
The same time they did, sir. And not a sight nor sound of her since. Not these 20 years.
Who else knew the Ashley Nortons?
Only t'other one I could think of would be Ben Sykes. Blind Ben, they call him now. But he could see Ben right enough.
And where is he?
Oh, he's hereabouts. Gone to Biddeford with his nephew today. But he'll be back Wednesday if you'd care to speak with him, sir.
Did he work for the Ashley Nortons?
In a manner of speaking, sir. He helped out with the experiments.
Experiments?
Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Ashley Norton was quite the scientist. Or so he said.
What did Ben Sykes have to do with these experiments?
Oh, he got things for them, sir.
What sort of things?
Live things, sir.
Live things?
Rabbits, animals, such like things, sir.
Oh, is that all?
No, sir. If you ask me, that wasn't all.
What else?
There was human beings, sir.
Human beings?
Yes, sir.
What human beings?
Why, I would say, sir, the nearest ones that came to hand.
What do you mean?
Oh, I'm sure you know much more about this than I do, sir. But they do say those bones were the bones of a woman.
Carruthers Carruthers wired today that he expects to locate the serving girl, Effie Wilkes, within a matter of hours. That means at least that she's alive. And it also means that her testimony will complete the case. And I can no longer deceive myself as to the outcome. I don't quite know why I sent Carruthers the information about Effie Wilkes, knowing as I do that I'm endangering myself by that action. Perhaps there's something of which I'm still just a little proud. I'm still primarily a detective. Well, I shall pursue this investigation impersonally and logically until the very last link in the chain. That link is Ben Sykes. Blind Ben. There is only one fact in which I can take some faint hope. Ashley Norton was a scientist, but presumably a doctor. And I can find no faintest memory in myself of any specialized scientific knowledge whatsoever. Well, Ben Sykes' nephew is going over to Biddeford today to bring the old man home. I shall go along and talk to him on the ride back. So you're Ben Sykes?
Aye. Blind Ben, they call me. But eyes are none. I can keep up with the best of them. What's your business in Clovelly, sir?
Come to ask you some questions about Mr. Ashley Norton.
Haven't we met before, sir?
Not that I remember, Ben.
Your voice is, what sort of questions, sir?
Perhaps about the experiments.
I'll say naught of the experiments, sir. They were the master's private business.
Very well. Did you know Mrs. Ashley Norton? Sarah Ashley Norton?
I did, sir. And no finer woman ever walked the earth.
Did he love her?
He loved her more than life itself, but...
But what?
Well, she helped him with his experiments. She was condemned hereabouts for that. But she helped him all through these long months until...
Until
she went away.
Hi there!
What's
look
that?
Out!
We have some
problems. Hi there! Stop the road!
Last I remember was the sickening sway of the wagon as it overturned in the ditch to the left of the road. I must have hit my head on something and lost consciousness just for a moment.
Help me, Whitney!
Watch out! Oh, I say, there's a nasty gash on his leg there. What about the other?
Take care of Ben. Well, I'll look to the inspector.
Right. There you are, old fellow. Now.
Inspector, you all right, sir?
I believe so.
Here we are. Here we are, sir.
Thank you. Is Ben all right? Oh, he's hurt.
His leg. I've sent for the doctor.
Let me have a look at it.
Oh, yes.
No, don't roll it back.
Huh?
Now, get me a knife.
Oh, here you are.
Now, help me with this.
Yeah.
Here. That's it. Compound fracture and bleeding pretty badly. Have you a handkerchief?
Ain't clean enough for a bandage.
It isn't a bandage. Now, get me a small stick. That's it. Now, around here, just below the patella. Now, hold on to that and relax it when I tell you.
Yes, sir.
Tibia and fibula, both compound. Dislocation of the talus. Need x-ray immediately.
What? I didn't know you was a doctor, sir.
Huh? What? Neither did I. How do you feel, Ben?
Much better, Mr. Drury. Thanks to you. She twitches now and then.
He'll be all right once it's set.
Lucky you was with us, sir.
Ben, you were going to tell me about the last time you saw Mr. Ashley Norton. Do you remember?
Yes, sir. I remember it well. He was going up to London, to the theatre, he said.
Was he going alone?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Ashley Norton had gone on ahead to do some shopping, he said.
Ben, do you remember when... What theatre?
Yes, sir. It was Christmas Eve, and the theatre was Drury Lane.
Yes. Yes, I know. I guess I knew it always.
Asking your pardon, sir, I'm an old man, and I can say things without anyone getting angry about them.
Yes, Ben, what is it?
You seem like a man who's running away from something.
Oh, running.
I wouldn't run away from it any longer, sir, if I was you.
Ben, I believe you're the only one of us who isn't blind.
Drury. Well, welcome back. I say, though, the chief's been trying to get a hold of you all day.
Yes, I know. Is Chief Carruthers in?
No, no. He had to meet someone at the train. He'll be back soon, though.
When he wants me, I'll be in my office, finishing my report.
Oh, that's so. You've been on a case. Murder, wasn't it? Did you catch the fellow?
Yes, I caught him. There's little now that needs to be added. Christmas Eve, Drury Lane Theatre. And Ashley Norton went alone, he said, because his wife Sarah had gone on ahead. And the medical training, it came back to me when I needed it as though it had been my life, my former life. There can be only one conclusion to this report. Sarah Ashley Norton was murdered by her husband. The case is closed. Signed, Roger Ashley Norton, formerly Terence Drury.
Oh, come in, Drury. I've been expecting you.
Yes. Here's my report, sir.
And there's time enough for that.
If you don't mind, I'd rather you read it now. I'd like to get it over with.
Yes, but, you know, we finally traced the serving girl, Effie Wilkes.
Yes. If you don't mind.
And through her, we traced someone else.
Does it really matter now?
I think perhaps it does. You may show in the witness, Peters.
Yes. Yes, it is. Roger. Oh, Roger.
I beg your pardon, but who...
Roger, don't you remember me?
Remember you? I only remember that you were someone who was once very dear to me. And now it's too late.
No, no, Roger. No, it isn't too late. I'm...
Sarah. Sarah.
Oh, darling.
You see, Drury, or rather Mr. Ashley Norton, it seems you and your wife did go to the Drury Lane Theatre on that Christmas Eve 20 years ago. And that very night, you were both to go on to Paris. Then at the last moment, you ran into some chap who begged you to deliver a lecture the next day. You agreed, and Mrs. Ashley Norton went on ahead. You were to meet her in Paris in 2 days.
Oh.
When you didn't come, I checked with the steamship company, and they said your ticket had been used. The thief who robbed you must have used it. But I couldn't know that. I thought you must be somewhere in France. The French police tried to trace you for years. Then I thought you must be dead. Oh, Roger. Roger.
My dear. Sarah, do you suppose you could call me Terence? I've got used to it, you know, and...
Very well, Terence. You haven't changed very much, really.
I suppose you haven't either. By the way, I had excellent taste in women in those days.
Oh, my dear. Oh, and can you ever forgive me?
Forgive you? For what?
The bones.
Oh, the bones.
Yes, I... Well, I suppose if that Mrs. Tumley hadn't been so nosy, I wouldn't have done it. But I was afraid if they found it in the house, it would look even worse. So that's why I did it.
Did what?
Buried your demonstration skeleton in the backyard. Under the holly tree.
What?
And so closes tonight's tale of Suspense.
Suspense on the CBS Radio Network first heard on January 25th, 1945. Boris Karloff, the star in that broadcast, in the same year he was in two motion pictures, The Isle of the Dead with co-star Alan Drew and The Body Snatcher alongside Bela Lugosi. This is Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, for an hour of mystery. And now, the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. This Mutual Broadcasting System episode stars Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. in an episode from November 5th, 1945. Based on the story The Adventure of the Devil's Foot by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the story is the 5th of November, but to add another title to the show, it's also known as the Gunpowder Plot.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Now let's keep our weekly appointment. Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. Draw up a chair.
Thanks.
That's it. By the way, do you know what date it is?
November 5th, isn't it?
That's quite correct. In England, it's known as Guy Fawkes Day. Ever heard of it?
Something to do with a gunpowder plot, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Bartell, it is. And as Sherlock Holmes and I had a very unusual adventure on the 5th of November many years ago, it seems appropriate that I should tell you about it tonight. But before I begin, I think I might help you to appreciate the true flavor of the story, so I tell you a little about the origin and customs of a Guy Fawkes Day.
It's a well idea, Dr. Watson.
Well, my boy, on November the 5th, 1605, exactly 340 years ago today, King James I was about to attend the opening of Parliament when a plot was discovered to blow up the House of Lords during the ceremony.
And the chief conspirator was Guy Fawkes, I suppose?
Yes, he was. He was captured in a vault immediately below the House of Lords, a vault full of barrels of gunpowder. Of course, he and his fellow conspirators were executed. And ever since then, November the 5th has been known as Guy Fawkes Day.
Well, how's it celebrated, Doctor?
Well, it's a great time for the youngsters. Bartell. They black their faces, throng the streets begging for pennies, and build bonfires in which to burn effigies of Guy Fawkes. These effigies are life-size dummies stuffed with straw and dressed in old clothes. The children parade chanting rhymes. Now, let me see. Oh, yes. Please to remember the 5th of November. Guy Fawkes, Guy, hit him in the eye.
The kids must have quite a time. Sort of like Halloween, aren't
they? Oh, not at all unlike it, my boy. Well, now that I've told you something about the customs of Guy Fawkes Day, I'll get on with my story. It began just before lunch, I remember, on November the 5th, 1899. The day was foggy and cold, and Holmes and I were seated each side of a blazing fire in our Baker Street room. From outside, we could hear the sound of voices laughing and singing. Suddenly, Holmes rose and crossed to the window, opened it, and looked out. Then he turned to me and spoke.
Children are having a great time, Watson, aren't they?
Yes, of course, we're thrilling to have a penance to walk here this morning.
Has it occurred to you, Watson, that the gunpowder plot offers very promising material to the speculative mind?
One way, Holmes. I say it's confoundedly chilly in here. Do you think you might close that window?
I'm sorry, old chap. As I was saying, the gunpowder plot offers very promising material to the speculative mind. I've made something of a study of the historical records of the case. There's more than little evidence to suggest that King James was never in any real danger.
Never in any danger? What makes you say that?
Knowledge of the proposed dastardly scheme came to light early. But James Stuart, King of England, the possessor of a shrewd and diabolical mind, used the spectacular discovery of the plot to try and bolster his waning popularity as well as to justify increased religious persecution.
That's the first I ever heard of it, Holmes.
I dare say, old fellow, but it's true just the same. I'm afraid James Stuart, King of England, was an unscrupulous tyrant. Come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
There is a gentleman to see you, Mr. Holmes. He says it's very important. I asked him to give you his card.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Ask him to come up, will you, please?
Who is it, Holmes?
A gentleman with a remarkably fine sense of timing. Read his card for yourself.
James Stuart. Great. God, it's an extraordinary coincidence that he should arrive just as we're talking about James Stuart, King of England.
Come in.
Mr. James Stuart.
How do you do, Mr. Stuart? My name is Sherlock Holmes, and this is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
Mr. Holmes, you've got to help me. I'm walking about in mortal fear of my life. You've got to help me.
Mr. Stuart, I suggest that you sit down. I'll do anything in my power to help you, but you must compose yourself first and tell me quietly what it is that's frightening you.
How can I compose myself when I may be dead within a few hours?
Now, Mr. Stuart, I'm a doctor. I really think that if I gave you a sedative, you'd find that...
How can you talk of sedatives when I... Oh, my heart. Doctor. My heart.
All right. Now, here, let me
me help you onto this sofa.
I imagine the brandy will be in order, Watson.
Yes, Holmes, and I'll give him some digitalis. A fellow with a bad heart like this shouldn't allow himself to get so excited.
Here you are, Mr. Stewart. Drink this.
That's it. And now this, Mr. Stewart.
What is it?
It's digitalis.
Very well. You feel better, sir? Yes, Mr. Holmes. Yes, I do. You're right. I shouldn't get so excited. My heart can't stand it, you know.
Watson, is he well enough to talk to you?
Yes, if he doesn't excite himself again.
I'll be careful, Doctor. I'll take it quietly. Mr. Holmes, when you saw my card just now, did it strike any responsive chord? Well,
naturally it did, sir. Who could fail to be intrigued when a James Stewart calls to see one on Guy Fawkes Day?
It isn't just coincidence that my name is James Stewart. I've got royal blood in my veins. People know of it. And that's another reason they're out to kill me. They're jealous of my heritage. Every instinct I have is a royal one. Now, you gentlemen know that falconry is a king's sport. And my greatest hobby is the breeding and training of falcons.
Stewart, please, Mr. Stewart, owing to the state of your health, I suggest that you be more economical with your explanation. In fact, I think it might be better if I question you.
Very well, Mr. Holmes.
Now, you say that your life is in danger. What evidence do you have to substantiate that claim?
My cousin, Guy Falconby, has threatened it. You see, Mr. Holmes, he and I are the only heirs to a wealthy uncle. His fortune will go to the surviving heir. If I were dead, Guy would inherit everything.
It seems to me, Mr. Stewart, that you should have applied to Scotland Yard for protection.
I did, Dr. Watson. Only a few days ago, I saw a certain inspector, Lestrade, I think his name was, and he laughed at my fears.
Lestrade? And he laughed at it. Then in that case, there may be something in your story, sir. You say that your cousin has threatened to kill you. Has he indicated the method he intends to employ?
Aye, he has. And it's a devilish plot. Guy has a bitter, twisted sense of humor, gentlemen. Even when he's planning as dastardly a thing as a murder. I am James Stewart. He is Guy Falconby, which is near enough to Guy Fawkes. Today is the 5th of November, and he's planning to blow me up.
Come, sir, come. You can't expect us to believe that.
But it's true. He warned me, and the celebrations that are going on in the streets of London today would make a rare cloak for his activities.
I must confess, Mr. Stewart, that I find your story most unconvincing. All your evidence appears to depend on conversations held between you and this cousin of yours. You have no facts to substantiate your claim.
But I have.
Then please, let's hear them.
I live at 23 Cavendish Square. A week ago, the house next door to me was let to a new tenant. Almost immediately, workmen became very active there. They were digging in the cellars, Mr. Holmes. I could hear the sounds of picks and shovels through the walls.
Digging in the cellar? That sounds significant, doesn't it, Holmes?
Extremely. Did you observe any other activities of the workmen, Mr. Stewart?
Aye, Mr. Holmes. Vans have been delivering large packing cases to the basement during the last 2 days. I know what's in them, too. It's gunpowder. I tell you, they're planning to blow me up today.
No. Steady. You mustn't excite yourself again.
What shall I do, Mr. Holmes?
I think, sir, it would be better for you to rest here for a while and then go to a nearby hotel, I would suggest, the Shaftesbury. And wait there until you hear from us.
And where are you gentlemen going?
Watson and I, after donning suitable disguises, will visit the house adjoining yours in Cavendish Square. I think an examination of the cellar there might prove most illuminating.
This must be the house, all right, Holmes. The empty packing cases are still by the foot of the basement steps.
Come on, Watson, let's go down and explore.
Upon my soul, I feel a little self-conscious in these clothes.
Don't need to, my dear Jeff. You look the most authentic inspector of plumbing. If anyone challenges us, you'd better let me do the talking, though. I think my accent might be a little more convincing.
Shh.
Listen.
I can't hear anything.
Exactly. We may reasonably assume that either the workmen are observing the Guy Fawkes holiday, or that their work is done. Let's try this door.
It's unlocked.
Yes. Well, this is too easy, Watson. We must be prepared for a trap. Come on.
I've got my revolver handy if there's any trouble.
Don't use it unless I tell you to. Remember, we're supposed to be plumbing inspectors.
It's pitch black in here. I can't see a thing.
Strike
by the gas jet. Strike a match. The cellar may be full of gunpowder.
Take the risk, old chap.
Here's a gas jet. I'll light it. That's better. Now we can see a little.
I think the workmen have completed their job. See that new wood on the crude door in the corner over there?
Now, where does it lead to, you sir?
Let's find out. Also unlocked. Mm-hmm. Miner's lantern waiting conveniently for us on this ledge. Ooh, this is ridiculously easy. Now I'm sure it's a trap.
I'll light the lantern. Great Scott. Tunnel.
Yes, a tunnel leading towards Mr. Stewart's house next door. Let's explore it.
Holmes, look. Look at the barrels. I bet they're full of gunpowder.
Undoubtedly. You've observed the fuses as well. Yes, the complete equipment for another gunpowder plot.
I can't believe my eyes. What a fantastic plan. But how could the murderer be certain that Stewart would be killed in the explosion?
I think that's easily answered, Watson. Remember Mr. Stewart's bad heart? In his present state of apprehension, an exploding firecracker would be enough to kill him.
I suppose so. Well, what's this lying on the floor? Curious, the funny strip of silk. A little ring on one.
Let me see it, Watson. Uh-huh. This seems familiar. By Jove, I believe it's a Jess.
A Jess? But no, sir.
Last piece of evidence necessary to confirm the conclusion.
Come out of there! And keep your hands above your head! I've got a revolver!
Right, y'all, Governor. We ain't doing no harm. Now remember, Watson, I'm doing the talking.
Come on. Out you come.
Well, well, you're a comical-looking pair. What were you doing in there?
Me and my mate got a message to come here and look over the plumbing, mister.
Plumbers, eh? Do you have any identification?
Yes, sir. Here's my badge. We're inspectors for the London County Council.
Oh, that's all right, my man. I saw the basement door open and I thought burglars might be here.
You're the owner of this house, sir?
Yes, but my agent let it recently to some tenants who've been behaving rather queerly, I'm told. I came round here to see what was happening.
If you're the owner, sir, perhaps you'd give me some facts for me records. I've got to fill in my records, you know.
What do you want to know?
Well, your name, please, sir.
Falconby. Guy Falconby.
Look, Alfie, hold your nose.
What did he say?
Nothing, sir. He's got hiccups. He's had a bad case of them. Haven't been able to stop him for months. Alfie, here, give me a pencil. And now, sir, your name is Guy Falconby. What's the name of the tenants this house is let to?
Well, three of them.
You know their names, sir? Got to have them for me records, you know.
Yes, the names are Winter, Ropewood, and Kane.
Winter, Ropewood, and Kane's right, sir. Sounds as if they might be a firm of solicitors, don't they, sir?
Well, perhaps they are. I haven't met them.
Oh, just one more question, sir, and then I'll even bother you no more.
Oh, what is it? My religion or my grandmother's maiden name?
No, sir, nothing like that. I just wondered who's living in the house next door on that side. We've had a complaint from there, too. Their pipes is bunged up.
Well, my cousin lives there. His name's James Stewart.
Mr. James Stewart. Much obliged, sir. Me and my mate will be going next door now. Come on, Alfie.
I'm not surprised his pipes are bunged up, as you so graphically put it. He's a great one for practical jokes about the house. As a matter of fact, he's planning one of them tonight. Oh, well, that's no concern of yours. By the way, my man, what's your name?
Nivett, sir. Tom Nivett. Come on, Alfie. We got work to do.
Holmes, I wish you'd tell me what's going on. Why we take this cab back to Lake Street.
Get out of these clothes. They serve their purpose. And there's more serious work afoot.
Well, I'm confused about our interview with Guy Falconby. Why did you say your name was Tom Nivett?
Oh, a touch of vanity, old fellow.
Vanity? How do you mean?
Consider the names in this case so far, Watson. James Stewart says that he's been threatened by Guy Falconby. A name, as Mr. Stewart points out, not unlike Guy Fawkes. You recall the names of the three tenants that Mr. Falconby gave us a few minutes ago?
Yes. Winter, Rokewood, and Kane. What's that got to do with it?
A great deal. Thomas, sir, Ambrose Rokewood and Robert Keynes were the three men executed with Guy Fawkes in the original gunpowder plot in 1605.
Good Lord, but where does Tom Nivett, the name you gave yourself, fit into the picture?
Thomas Nivett was the Westminster magistrate who arrested the conspirators.
Since the would-be murderer has such an academic knowledge of the original plot, I thought I'd let him know that he was up against an opponent worthy of his steel.
Well, Doctor, you and Mr. Holmes were certainly having yourselves quite a Guy Fawkes day. What happened when you got back to Baker Street?
We quickly changed out of our disguises and back into our ordinary clothes. I was still pretty much in the dark, as usual. And I kept questioning Holmes as to our next move. He was in a state of suppressed excitement. And it was obvious as he spoke to me that he was anxious to be off.
No, Dodwell. There's so much work ahead of us.
Dodwell, I'm not dawdling. I'm getting as far as I can. What's our next move, anyhow?
We'll split forces. I must get hold of my band of street urchins, the Baker Street Irregulars. I'm going to surround Mr. Stewart's house in Cavendish Square, and they'll be invaluable for such purpose.
What do you want me to do?
Go to the Shaftesbury Hotel and collect Mr. Stewart, then return with him to his house and wait me there. I shall join you as soon as I've rounded up the irregulars, but I must warn you, don't leave Mr. Stewart for a moment. Don't let him out of your sight until you see me again.
Oh, of course I won't, Holmes, but I must say, the idea of all that gunpowder in the cellar doesn't make me feel any good or happy.
Have faith in me.
Huh?
You know, I wouldn't expose you to any danger if I could avoid it. And I assure you that I shall join you and Mr. Stewart very shortly. You have your revolver?
Yes, of course.
Good. And give Mr. Stewart this revolver, will you? Tell him that I insist that he carries it. I fear that his own has probably been tampered with.
Oh, that's your Holmes. I'll see that he has it. This is a strange business, I must say. That Guy Fawkenby seems such a decent sort of fellow.
Yes, he appeared to be a most amiable man, didn't he? This is indeed an unusual case, Watson. We're up against one of the most sinister and twisted antagonists that we've ever met. Well, old chap, I'm leaving now. I'll join you soon. And don't forget, stay close to Mr. Stewart. Stay very close to him.
I wish your friend were here.
Anna, don't get so excited, Mr. Stewart. He'll be here any moment now. You still got the revolver that I gave you?
Yes, it's in my pocket. But what's the good of a revolver if there should be an explosion? Answer me that if you can.
Well, you must have faith in Mr. Holmes, sir. He's arranging now to have this house of yours surrounded by his band of street urchins. They'll see that no one gets to the cellar next door to light the fuses.
Ah, a bunch of children. How can they do anything?
How can they do anything? You don't know the Baker Street Irregulars, Mr. Stewart. And it's a perfect day for them to operate. As black-faced boys begging for pennies, they'd pass unnoticed anywhere.
I hope you're right. But I have a premonition, Doctor. There's going to be a tragedy. I know it.
No, sir. Take it easy. Take it easy. Remember your heart. You're in splendid hands when Sherlock Holmes is on the case. Here he is now. Holmes, I must say, I'm glad to see you.
Have you received your visitor yet?
Visitor? We've seen no one.
Then be on the alert. I've just been questioning the boys surrounding this house. A few moments ago, some children pulled a small cart up to the back door, a cart containing a life-sized dummy. My irregulars thought it was an effigy on its way to a bonfire.
Well, why shouldn't it be?
I have a reason to believe that it's someone visiting you in disguise, Mr. Stewart. A visitor who is mounting the back stairs at this very moment.
You've got to stand by me, Holmes. You've got to protect me.
Don't worry, sir. Come in.
Look. Look at that apparition.
Wait, Scotter. A Guy Fawkes dummy. A dark lantern in his hand, and it's walking.
And also talking, I trust.
Keep away from me. I've got a revolver.
Take for Victoria's sake. If you won't give me one, I'll take two. The better for me and the worse for you.
It's Guy Fawkenby.
Keep away from me, do you hear?
The better for me and the worse for you.
All right, then. I'm going to fire.
Hear me, Mr. Stewart. The revolver I provided you with seems to be unloaded. How very odd.
What in thunder's all this about?
You have just witnessed an attempted murder, Watson.
Murder? What are you talking about? This is a game. James and I had arranged the whole thing.
You may have thought it was a game, Mr. Fawkenby, but I assure you that your cousin...
Grab him, Watson!
Look, he seems to be leaving us.
Leave me alone! Take your hands off me!
My heart.
Help me put him on the sofa. That's it.
I'll get him some digitalis.
I don't want to appear unnecessarily stupid, but will someone tell me what this is all about?
Oh, pleasure, Mr. Falkenby. Your cousin has planned one of the most fantastic murder plots that I've ever encountered. Came to us for the story that you had threatened his life.
But that's ridiculous. I'm very fond of it.
Of course it's ridiculous. The whole plot is quite ridiculous. He leased the house next door, had a tunnel dug, and gunpowder and fuses planted there. He even entered the name of the tenants as Winter, Rookwood, and Keynes to give the apparent plot a further authenticity.
You mean my cousin was the real tenant?
Certainly. However, he was clumsy enough to drop that piece of silk with the wire ring on the end that you found in the cellar, Watson.
The thing you called a jest.
And what's a jest?
It's a strap that goes round the falcon's leg to which its leash is fastened. You will remember that Mr. Stewart informed us that falconry is his hobby. And it therefore indicated that he had been in the cellar and consequently must have known about the whole plot.
And all he was trying to do was to build up in our minds the belief that his cousin was trying to kill him.
Exactly, my dear fellow. Had we believed him, of course he could have shot you just now, Mr. Falconby, in apparent self-defense.
Good Lord, what a fantastic plot. Still can't quite believe it.
Mr. Falkenby, why are you dressed as a Guy Fawkes dummy?
Well, it was James' idea. He said that he was going to dress up too and that we'd go around the bonfires tonight and frighten people by appearing as live dummies. But the last message he sent told me to come here, that we'd play a practical joke on a couple of friends of
his. Did he provide the costume you're wearing?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he did.
You search the pockets for any weapons?
No, but I will.
And while you're doing that, I'll examine this dark lantern. How's the patient, Watson?
Well, I've given him some digitalis. Now I'll get him some brandy.
I can't find anything in the pockets.
Here's the hunter. Look here. Inside the lantern is a dagger. Your cousin planted it there to substantiate the claim that you were trying to kill him. Had his plans worked, you would have been dead, Mr. Falkenby, before you could have told the truth.
Here! Come back here, Mr. Stewart!
James! He slipped out of the door.
Confound it! He was faking that heart attack. Come on, Watson. After him.
Please excuse me. I'm trying to find a friend of mine. It's most important. Holmes! Holmes, where are you?
Here I am, Watson.
I hear you calling me.
Out of the way, please. I'm coming, Holmes.
You
got away from me in the crowd.
I'm afraid this Stewart got away from us.
Well, we'll never find him in this
mob. He's a dangerous man. There's no knowing what he might do. Where are the irregulars? Ah, there's Wiggins.
Wiggins!
Hello, Mr. Elms. Dr. Watson.
Wiggins, did you see a man run out of that house a few minutes ago?
No, Governor. Perhaps Charlie did. Hey, Charlie, come over here. It's Mr. Elms.
All right. I bet Charlie didn't see anything, though. He's got some stubby girl with him. Hello, Mr. Elms and Dr. Watson.
Hello, Charlie.
Charlie, hello.
Did you see a man run through this crowd a few minutes ago, a tallish man with a gray mustache?
Yes, I did. A man came running out of the house over there.
That's the house. Where'd he go?
He ran down toward the shop.
And he stole our dummy, he did.
The one we were going to burn in a bonfire. I tried to stop him, but he got away.
Holmes, Holmes, look up there on the roof. There's a figure. By Jove, I believe it's James Stewart.
That's the man. He's the one that stole our dummy.
He's standing up on the roof. He's going to jump.
If he does, he's going to land in the bonfire.
There he goes. He is jumping. Right in the middle of the fire.
It's awful. He'll be burned
up. Now, buddy Wiggins, that wasn't a man who fell into the bonfire.
What do you mean?
From the gyrations that the figure performed as it fell, I'm convinced that Mr. Stewart threw the stolen dummy to try and put us off the track.
Then Stewart's still up there.
He is, Watson. Come along, old boy. It's up onto the rooftops for us. Up onto the rooftops. My hand, Watson?
Yes. I've got it. Up you come. Up. That's it.
Phew. Seems to me that the fire escapes must be designed for giants.
Keep your eyes skinned, old fellow. Stuart's a dangerous man. Might be hiding behind those chimney stacks. Come on.
My soul, this is a strange place to be on Guy Fawkes night.
Yes, a comprehensive case, Watson. It starts in a cellar and ends on a rooftop.
Look, Holmes. By the parapet there.
Crumpled body of Mr. Stewart.
Looks to
me as if it... Yes, he's dead, Holmes.
Well, it's not surprising. The effort of carrying the dummy up here and throwing it, combined with his own state of excitement, is too much for him. Well, quite frankly, I can't say that I'm sorry.
No, indeed. He planned a murder, and if it hadn't been for you, he would have succeeded. An extraordinary case, Holmes.
Yes, old chap. One that should long make us remember the 5th of November.
By Jove, yes.
Please to remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason, and plot. I see no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Well, Doctor, as you boys would say, that story was a bit of exciting, what?
Yes, yes, yes. And even now, I sort of lose my breath almost when I remember climbing that fire escape.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of the Devil's Foot. Music was by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studio.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on the works of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Basil Rathbone, and Nigel Bruce, starred in a November 5th, 1945 broadcast on Mutual. And our cases are closed in this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Golden Era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.